Today, I will discuss two conceptual puzzles on black holes, namely the black hole information loss problem and the firewall problem. In particular, I will report some progresses toward possible resolutions by using new techniques from quantum information theory. Okay, let me see. Okay, good. Okay, so black holes, which corresponds to, you know, certain singular solutions of Einstein equation, have long fascinated us with various puzzles. Now, general relativity can, of course, explain a number of cosmological events successfully, but quantum aspects of black holes still remain elusive. Now, perhaps the most famous problem is the information loss puzzle. According to the semi-classical calculation by Hawking, an object which has fallen into a black hole will be lost forever. But this clearly contradicts with unitarity of quantum mechanics. Now, the discovery of the ADS-CFT correspondence strongly suggests that the information is not lost, but it is hidden in some non-local degrees of freedom somewhere and will leak out later in some way which is not easily accessible to us. But if we were to believe that the black hole is obeying the rule of quantum mechanics, then the real question is, of course, to understand how the information is leaking out from a black hole. Another interesting question, which was originally pointed out by Martha, is the firewall puzzle. Now, according to the equivalence principle of general relativity, an infalling observer will experience nothing special when she crosses the black hole horizon. However, in a black hole, which is maximally entangled with the outside degree of freedom, the smoothness of the horizon contradicts with monogamy of quantum entanglement. This suggests possible presence of a high energy barrier near the horizon. Now, in this colloquium, I will demonstrate that a certain physical phenomena called quantum information scrambling provide a useful insight toward resolutions of these two problems. Now, as for the information loss problem, I will actually present a certain rigorous information theoretic formula, which relates recoverability of the information and scrambling phenomena. This result actually provides a sort of formal proof that the information can indeed escape from a black hole and how. And as for the, as for the firewall problem, I will present explicit construction of the Hawking's interior partner mode or partner operator. And this will allow us to deduce the experience of the infalling observer and reveals how we may avoid the monogamy violation. Now, I hope to keep this colloquium accessible, or I should, but here I still want to give some comments for experts to be, you know, more precise. First of all, unitarity of a black hole is, of course, a debatable issue. So in this colloquium, I will assume that the black hole is unitarily evolving and demonstrate that there's no apparent paradox. So that is what I mean by resolution of the problems. Namely, I'm not going to prove the unitarity. Okay. Second, I will assume that the black hole has only finitely many microscopic states obeying the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy formula. In my opinion, this is the most crucial assumption. Now, here it is worth mentioning that the ADS-CFT correspondence is not particularly part of my assumption. The third, my proposal or my resolution to the firewall puzzle is orthogonal to the so-called ER equals to EPR proposal by Madhusena and Sustin. In fact, you will see that the proposal along that line actually suffers from the non-locality problem, whereas my proposal gets around it. So in summary, I will assume that the black hole is just a finite dimensional quantum system with the locality, and demonstrate that there is no apparent paradox. That is what I'm going to do. Okay, so let's begin with the information loss problem. Now, the most concrete way to address the information loss problem would be to actually throw a quantum state into a black hole and ask if we can later recover it or not. Of course, our current technology does not allow us to perform such an experiment, but we theoretical physicists can always make progresses by a thought experiment and by using simplified toy model. So in this colloquium, I would like to focus on a certain variant of the information loss thought experiment, which is due to Hayden and Preskill. Now, this thought experiment is sort of designed to capture the most essential moment when the information actually leaks out from the black hole. Now, imagine that we have the so-called old black hole, which has already emitted more than half of its content. Such an old black hole will be maximally entangled with early Hawking radiation. Here, I will model such a black hole as just n copies of EPR pairs, where n corresponds to the coarse-grained entropy or Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the black hole. Now, some of you may already become cautious because of this oversimplification, but I promise you that my argument is actually quite universal in a sense that it is not really restricted to such simple toy model. Now, the Hayden-Preskill thought experiment proceeds in the following way. Alice throws unknown quantum state into an old black hole, which is in A, and then Bob tries to reconstruct it by collecting the Hawking radiation that will come out from the black hole later. But the interesting twist Hayden and Preskill added is to assume that Bob has an access to both the early radiation and later radiation. So here I pictorially summarize the setup and introduce some notations. So here B is the black hole, R is the early radiation, and B and R were initially entangled with each other, so EPR pairs. Now the black hole time evolves by certain unitary operator U, so dynamics of the black hole. And D is the late radiation, and C is the remaining black hole degree of freedom. So finally, A is the Hilbert space for the Alice's initial quantum state. And Bob has access to both D and R, and he tries to reconstruct the quantum state on A. Now the question is, can he do that or not? The answer is, of course, yes, if it's unitary. But surprisingly, Bob needs to collect just a few qubits in order to reconstruct Alice's quantum state. Namely, Alice's quantum state is support, if the Alice quantum state is just m qubit state, then you only need to collect m plus epsilon qubit, where epsilon is just order one number, which does not depend on the system size. So in some sense, if you throw something into the black hole, it immediately reflects back to you, like an information mirror. That is what Hayden and Preskill found out. Now, in retrospect, I think this Hayden-Preskill paper was the beginning of the recent rapid progresses in our understanding of quantum gravity. And it has actually given birth to a large number of new research avenues in quantum information theory, condensed matter theory, and I think string theory as well. However, there are two crucial problems which are left unsolved in their paper. First of all, they assume that black hole evolves by the so-called Hall random unitary operator. Roughly speaking, basically you can imagine a set of all the possible unitary operator acting on n qubit system and pick one of them at random as the black hole dynamics. Then if you accept this assumption, then well, what Hayden and Preskill claimed is of course true, but of course the black hole does not time evolve by a Hall random unitary operator. Therefore, it remained open whether the Hayden-Preskill phenomena can occur in actual black hole or not. Second problem is Hayden and Preskill only showed that it is sort of possible to recover an information, but they were not able to tell us how to do so. So in some sense, the result by Hayden and Preskill was sort of a proof of existence of the recovery protocol. Now, in a moment, I will resolve these two problems. But the first task we should probably do is to clarify what we mean by scrambling. That is one of the central topics of this talk. Okay, so after this surprising result by Hayden and Preskill, many people started wondering what kind of properties of a black hole makes this strange phenomena possible. And people just decided to call it scrambling. But it actually took almost, I think, 80 years for people to figure out what actually scrambling is. Now, right after the work by Hayden and Preskill, the dominant opinion was that scrambling is some kind of growth of entanglement. Imagine that we have a pure quantum state with no long-range entanglement, such as a product state. And again, imagine that this product state undergoes time evolution under a strongly coupled Hamiltonian. Then eventually the system will get thermalized and the small subsystem will look completely featureless, entangled with the rest of the system. So in some sense, the subsystem will forget about the information about its initial state. Now, I do sympathize with these ideas, like people who had advocated entanglement growth as a definition of scrambling. And it indeed sounds a bit like information loss phenomena simulated on a spin chain or qubits. But unfortunately, the entanglement growth or the summarization is just different from scrambling. Namely, later researchers have shown that entanglement growth cannot happen in a time scale, which is relevant for the Hayden-Preskill thought experiment, namely the scrambling time. This concern was explicitly raised in my own paper with Hosseruti and Roberts, where we showed that we argued that the entanglement velocity tends to be smaller than scrambling velocity. And also later, actually more recently, Peter Shor, the famous quantum information theorist Peter Shor, gave actually a no-go argument from the causality of black hole spacetime. So unfortunately, scrambling is something different from the growth of the entanglement. Then what is the correct definition? It turns out that instead of quantum states, operators are the ones which grow under scrambling dynamics. So for concreteness, let us imagine that we have a one-dimensional chain of qubits, and let us pick some local Pauli operator W supported on single qubit. Now in the Heisenberg picture, this local operator will grow into some complex operator under time evolution like this. So its support becomes bigger and bigger. In other words, the size of the operator WT will grow under the scrambling dynamics. Now, I will demonstrate in a moment that this growth of the operator size is actually the essence of quantum information scrambling. In fact, this is what makes the Hayden-Preskill recovery phenomena possible. Now, in a more sort of quantum information theoretical language, the growth of the operator can be actually well understood by viewing operators as quantum states. And such a thing is actually possible. Namely, there is a formal map between operators acting on n qubits to quantum states supported on 2n qubits. And this map is called the Choi-Jamiokovsky isomorphism, and it has like history of like over 40 years or 50 years in quantum information theory. Now, in my paper with Hosseruti and Roberts, we actually showed that the growth of the operator, the size growth, can be interpreted as entanglement growth of the operator when you view the operator as a quantum state. So this is roughly the idea of the scrambling, but some of you may feel that the growth of operator is actually a concept which really relies on discrete systems, right? The size is something discrete. But it turns out that this operator state mapping works for continuum system, including quantum field theory. But in this talk, I will focus on discrete systems for simplicity. So anyway, the main message is that scrambling is not entanglement growth, but it is operator growth.
Benny, can I ask a question?
Oh, yes.
Is this N to 2N and this isomorphism that you mentioned going to be important for the logic afterwards? If not, forget. But if yes, can you give
a basic idea
of what is the physical picture behind and why N goes to 2N?
Okay. I made a colloquium in a way that it's not that important, but it's actually a Thermofield double state is one way of, it's actually one example of such Choi-Jamiokovsky isomorphism. So Thermofield double state itself is actually a state representation of identity operator. And then, so such a mapping is actually naturally already studied in the gravity setting. But we can skip this part and then to proceed actually. But I'm happy to discuss it more privately, but yeah.
No, but I understood, yeah. The analogy with thermofield doublet is enough. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, good. So the size of operator, of course, will grow under the time evolution. That is something everyone probably know. But the real question is how to measure the growth of the operators in actual physical systems. And for this, we needed the sort of a genius idea by Kitaev. It turns out that the growth of operator can be studied by using the so-called out-of-time ordered correlation functions. Well, people call it OTOC, but it has a following form, V0, WT, V0, WT. Okay, so it's pretty strange correlator. Now, the point is initially V operator and W operator would commute with each other, especially when they are supported on different qubits. But later time, when WT becomes a big operator, V and W do not commute with each other anymore. And then this out of time ordered correlation function becomes small or decorrelates. And then from this observation, you can easily see that this out of time ordered correlator can measure if WT has a non-trivial support on the qubit where V is supported. So in this sense, OTOC can measure the size of the operator WT. Now, this special type of correlation function was originally studied by Larkin and Ovchinnikov in, I think, 1950s, or 60s, 50s, I think. Some people, of course, might be worried about the fact that this OTOC involves traveling back in time. Now, I want to assure you that we do not need a time machine to measure this quantity. It turns out this quantity can be measured or defined without reversing the flow of the time in the thermofield double setup, but I'm not going to detail this thing in this colloquium. Now, a more formal definition of scrambling can be obtained by using out of time ordered correlation function. So just to be rigorous, myself and Kitaev proposed the following decomposition correlation function should occur when the system has scrambled after the scrambling time. So whenever I say scrambling, the mathematically precise definition is based on the following asymptotic formula. Okay, this is just for mathematical rigor. Now, let me go back to black holes, but just briefly. We can actually easily show that the black holes indeed scramble quantum information. It has characterized by OTOCs. Now, explicit calculation of OTOCs are possible by interpreting V0 or WT as a gravitational shock wave falling into the black hole. And such a black hole gravitational shock wave will represent a sort of a back reaction to the underlying geometry. So this calculation was sort of originally performed by Tupuft in 1980s, in the time that people didn't know about OTOCs. And also this calculation was sort of repeated by Kian Fehling in 1990s. More recently, this calculation was extended to the ADS CFT correspondence setup by Schenker and Stanford, as well as Kitaev. Such calculation have been now performed from bulk and boundary perspectives in a number of holographic systems already. Now here it is good to emphasize that this auto calculation is something which goes beyond Hawking's original semi-classical calculation, simply because it incorporates the effect of gravitational back reaction that changes the underlying geometry. So this is precisely the place where our discussion deviates crucially from Hawking's. Okay, so having reviewed the definition of scrambling, now let us proceed to actually proving the information is indeed recoverable from the black hole. Now, let me briefly recall the Hayden-Breccia setup again. Alice throw a quantum state into the black hole, and Alice Hilbert space was on A, and then Bob tries to recover it by having access to both B and R, late and early radiation. Now, there's one little information theory trick I need to mention, that is, instead of actual quantum state, in information theory, we often introduce the so-called reference system A prime, which is entangled with A. That is, you prepare EPR pair, and then only part of it you throw into the black hole while keeping the other half outside the black hole. Now, why do we need to do such a trick? It's because by using this reference system trick, we can effectively keep track of the initial all sorts of initial state that was thrown into the black hole. Now, the important point is that a quantum state is recoverable from a black hole if the reference system A prime is entangled with D and R. So the point here is that the recoverability can be quantitatively assessed by using quantum entanglement. Okay, so in short, we are interested in whether A prime and DR are entangled or not. Now, the recoverability of information is guaranteed due to the following theorem, which was proven by myself and Kitaev. Suppose that the black hole's dynamic is scrambling in a sense of out of time ordered correlators. And also let's assume that D, the late radiation, is bigger than A, the infalling quantum state. Then it turns out that the subsystem C and A prime will be decoupled or not entangled with each other. Now, this theorem implies that, of course, A prime and C are not entangled, which is actually equivalent to say that A prime is maximally entangled with D and R. From this, we can actually conclude that our information is recoverable by having access to both D and R. So this provides a formal proof that the quantum information is indeed recoverable from a black hole. And you can see that this is indeed because of the quantum information scrambling or this decoupling phenomena induced by a scrambling dynamics or induced by the gravitational back reaction. Okay, now the remaining task is to find concrete methods to recover a quantum state from an old black hole. Now, at this moment, there are, I think, two types of concrete recovery protocol. First protocol is based on the traversable wormhole geometry, and the second protocol is due to myself and Kitaev. And I will skip going into details of these protocols, but let me just mention that these two protocols work at a very different time scale and a very different quantum circuit complexity. Namely, our protocol works after the scrambling time, but the traversal wormhole protocol works before the scrambling time. Also, computational complexity or circuit complexity of these protocols sort of jump around the scrambling time. So there is an interesting kind of phase transition of the computational complexity of this recovery task. Now, I personally speculate that this phase transition has an interesting holographic interpretations, but I don't go into detail with it. Now, finally, let me briefly advertise my upcoming paper, namely quantum information theoretic aspects of this traversable wormhole protocol was not really understood until recently. And then we have explained why it happens from operator growth viewpoint in our upcoming paper. And also there is a overlapping work by Google group. Okay. Now, after I published this Hayden-Breccia recovery protocol paper, interestingly, several groups of experimentalists approached me to discuss actual implementation of recovery protocol in a laboratory. In the end, the group of ion trap experimentalists led by Chris Monroe at the University of Maryland actually implemented or simulated this protocol in their ion trap setup. This result was published like 2 years ago. And this experiment simulated the quantum information scrambling phenomena with 7 qubits or 7 ion. And I know that it is a very small number, which is much, much smaller than the real black hole. But this was the very first experimental demonstration of the quantum information scrambling in a convincing way, as well as a simulation of physics of a quantum black hole. But of course, as you know, I am a theorist, but I'm still very excited about this experiment. In fact, I have a sort of a kind of secret hope, which I may want to share with you, that there's maybe 100 years from now, we might be able to build a very powerful particle collider, which is powerful enough to create a micro black hole. And then if I really want to test unitarity of the black hole, I would probably perform this Hayden-Bresky recovery protocol, because it's the most convincing way to test the unitarity of the black hole. And I'm not sure if I will be able to see such an experiment in my lifetime, but this is exactly the reason why I'm very excited about this experiment, because I view this experiment as like very first step toward this ultimate goal. Anyway, so this is the end of the first part of my talk. So now I would like to move on to the second part, which is about the firewall puzzle. And I don't know if I should pause for questions, or maybe I should just go to the second part. I don't know. If you have some questions, maybe I can take a few.
Just a question. So you said that if there is a prime, then if a prime is entangled with dr, you can recover dr, right?
Yeah.
Do you need to do operations on a prime or no?
Oh, no. Right. So this is just an information theoretic trick. So what we will act on some unitary operator, recover unitary operator on d and r to output the same quantum state. Now, if I can distill entanglement between a prime and dr, then that is sufficient, that guarantees that there is the same protocol reconstruct the quantum state. That is, I'm not sure if I explained it correctly. So suppose that there exists a recovery unitary operator which acts on dr, and then if it distills EPR pair between a prime and dr, then the same unitary operator can be used to reconstruct the quantum state prepared on Hilbert space A. That is the statement. So you don't need to touch A prime. Yeah.
So you don't need to touch A prime, but how complicated, but I'm just a bit confused by something. Maybe it's very naive, but this operator should be super complicated, right? I mean, if I have to recover what folded to a black hole, it needs to be a huge
So,
a huge
right.
mess. But then in the very beginning, it says, oh, I only need a few qubits and there are these black holes as mirrors. I got
right.
confused.
So a few qubit is the statement that if you catch just a few qubit, it is possible to recover. There exists a unitary operator acting on these qubits, which would output the initial quantum state. That is the statement which Hayden and Preskill proved, and also what we followed up with this this result. But now the second question is, can we actually do that or not? And then it is possible, but Hayden and Preskill didn't tell us how to do that. And then what we did later is that we came up with the actual protocol to reconstruct the original quantum state. And that is, well, complicated or not complicated. I don't know, it's really up to you, but from the computational complexity viewpoint, it is at most complicated as the original unitary operator U. So if unitary operator U, the dynamics of the black hole can be implemented efficiently, then the same thing, I mean, you can reconstruct efficiently. But of course, performing this experiment or this protocol in actual black hole is of course very difficult. And that's another question.
Yeah, may I ask you about the experiment you mentioned? So how do you distinguish scrambling there from thermalization? Because there are not, I mean, this is pretty small, you are saying, and
So yeah, that's you... That's great question. That is exactly the motivation of our paper. So before our paper, there are actually several experiments which demonstrated the decay or decay of out of time ordered correlation function. But the problem is the scrambling signature was like decay of signal. So seeing nothing is the proof of scrambling, which is really not convincing. And the it's actually, if you have thermalization or decoherence or mistake in the experiment, you easily lose the signal. So just by doing the experiment badly, you can simulate scrambling. So that was before our paper. So our idea is that by performing this recovery protocol, we can convincingly demonstrate a quantum scrambling phenomena. That is, if black hole is evolving unitarily, we should be able to reconstruct the quantum state. But if black hole is, well, in this experiment, and the system is evolving with lots of decoherence, then such a recovery protocol shouldn't work. So the fact that the recovery worked is actually a good guarantee that we have a quantum information scrambling, which is different from thermalization. That's why we said this is a verified quantum information scrambling.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just a bit confused because in the beginning you made you basically contrasted scrambling to thermalization, saying okay that like the growth of state is or growth of angle, that's like thermalization, and scrambling is not that. So I'm just thinking about thermalization within a even within an isolated system. Yeah, in print, okay, which is not. Maybe there is some like different terminology here, which I'm not quite capturing.
Yeah, so, it's just simply a thermalization in a closed quantum system is not enough to induce a scrambling phenomena which would guarantee recoverability. So there are systems which are thermalized, the unitary dynamics which makes the system thermalized, but that is not enough to have such a hidden Prescott phenomena.
Right. So yeah, so in this small system in the experiment, okay, so I understand that you're demonstrated that the evolution is unitary and can be basically reverted or at least recovered. Mm-hmm. But then in the same system, you can also have the thermalization like process, without even interaction with the outside, with any external systems, right? You can just have thermalization inside. So I wonder if there is any difference between scrambling and thermalization in this sense, in the context of this small system.
Oh, okay. So if you're asking about this specific experiment, it is of course a small system size, so it's far from many body physics. Mm-hmm. But the thermalization and the scrambling are very different in a sense that, I don't know what you mean by thermalization and then recovery in thermalized system, but what we are doing is not like applying U-dagger, right? We are not doing that. Mm-hmm. We only catch a few qubits from the quantum system or black hole, and by using these few qubits to reconstruct the quantum information. And that is very non-trivial. And,
I see. Yeah, I think I get the difference. Uh-huh, thank you.
All right, so perhaps I should move on. Okay, so yeah, thanks for the questions. And then now the point is actually, if you follow this first part, the second part is actually almost immediate. So it's pretty important that people follow first part. But anyway, let me begin by reminding you of the problem. Now, I'm gonna review the firewall puzzle, but I want to keep this review part very brief because otherwise, this part can easily take more than 1 hour and people get very excited or emotional, which is not necessarily beneficial for us. So let's keep this part. I'm going to introduce minimal things you should know. Now, imagine again that we have an old black hole, which is maximally entangled with the early radiation R. Now, according to the effective field theory calculation, pairs of entangled particles will be created across the horizon. Now here, we are going to focus on particular pair outgoing mode D and out interior mode B tilde. They are entangled with each other. These pairs are often called Hawking's pair in the literature. Now, let us consider an informing observer as actual person, let's say Alice, who actually tries to cross the horizon of this old black hole and actually tries to observe the interior mode D tilde. Now, since this old black hole is maximally entangled, the outgoing mode D must be entangled with degree of freedom in the early radiation R. We may call such partner degree of freedom by RD. Then what we have found so far is that the outgoing mode D is entangled with interior mode D tilde inside the black hole. And also it is entangled, D is entangled with some degree of freedom RD inside the early radiation. However, this appears to contradict with the monogamy of quantum entanglement. Namely, D cannot be entangled with two things simultaneously. Therefore, in an old black hole, it seems that the outgoing mode D and the interior mode D tilde may not be entangled with each other across the horizon. And this will suggest the presence of the firewall on the horizon. Now, one immediate reaction to this puzzle is, of course, some of the assumptions behind this argument was just wrong. Okay, so indeed, we have implicitly assumed that the black hole is unitarily evolving. And also, I assume the validity of effective field theory near the horizon, the Lindros horizon, and maybe a few other things. So it's natural to doubt some of these like assumptions. But in my personal opinion, I think it's a bit hasty to, let's say, jump to a conclusion like, okay, black hole's dynamics is non-unitary because of this. Because I think we should try our best to come up with some resolution before doubting our fundamental assumptions. Okay. Now, one possible approach toward the resolution of this problem, which is, in my opinion, still a rather naive one, is the so-called A equals to RB proposal. Well, sometimes it is bundled under the slogan of ER equals to EPR approach. Now here, A and RB come from notations in the original paper. And actually, I'm using slightly different notations. Sorry about that. But the point here is that this approach postulates the following. Interior mode D tilde is actually embedded in the RE radiation R. In other words, we will view D tilde and RD as same physical object. That is, when Alice crosses the horizon and see the interior mode D tilde, then she is actually seeing the something on the RE radiation. Of course, this problem, this approach has an obvious drawback of the non-locality. So why can Alice suddenly see something on the RE radiation by simply crossing the horizon? This potential loophole can be made more manifest by bringing the RE radiation to somewhere in a distant universe far away from a black hole. Or you can also consider the two-sided ADS black hole to make this problem more explicit. As you know, two-sided black hole, the two sides are not directly coupled. So the infolding observer started from one side should not be able to see things on the other side, if we believe the locality of the boundary quantum mechanical systems. Now, despite this subtlety, A equals to RB approach remains popular among some research community. There are some now specific examples of approaches listed here, essentially attempt to argue why such non-locality is acceptable. So it's more like a compromise. Here, examples of black hole complementarity, ER equals to EPR, state dependence approach, and approaches based on decoding or computational complexities. Now, as I have mentioned already, my proposal is orthogonal to these approaches. So in a moment, I will provide a simple counterargument and describe an alternative resolution to the firewall puzzle by considering the effect of including the infolding observer. Okay. So the firewall puzzle is about the experience of the infolding observer, but previous works have actually overlooked the importance of an infolding observer. So then why don't we just simply include infolding observer as a part of the quantum system and examine its effect on entanglement structure. And that is what we are going to do now. So suppose that infolding observer Alice, who actually carries some finite energy and finite entropy, jump into a black hole. Again, I have simplified the system as n copies of EPR pair plus Alice. But this time Alice is actually qubits. Now, depending on the initial state of the black depending on the initial state of the infolding observer, the black hole will of course respond in a different manner. Instead of keeping track of all the physics that would depend on the infolding observer, it is again convenient to append the reference system A prime, which is entangled with A. This is the same trick we used for the Hayden-Preskill thought experiment. Now the infolding observer A and the black hole B time envelope by some unitary operator U. And for now, we simply assume that the dynamics U is scrambling in a sense of out of time ordered correlation function. Now, in the absence of the infolding observer, the interior partner mode can be found on the array radiation. But in the presence of the infolding observer, the entanglement structure seems to change. Now, the central question is, where can we find the interior partner modes? That is the question I want to address. Now, once again, I need to use the similar theorem. So this decoupling theorem becomes useful. In the context of the firewall puzzle, the decoupling theorem will read as follows. Suppose that the black hole is scrambling. And let's assume that the Hilbert space size of an infolding observer A is larger than the Hilbert space size of the outgoing mode D. Then subsystem D and R will be decoupled. Now, this is essentially the same theorem we used for the Hayden-Preskill problem. This time, however, it is used for different choices of subsystem. The statement of this simple theorem sort of casts doubt on previous approaches for the firewall puzzle. Namely, let's recall that A equals to RB approach argued that interior mode is embedded in the array radiation. Yeah, maybe at the beginning it was yes, but the point is that such an assertion seems to run into trouble or actually becomes irrelevant once an infolding observer as an actual physical object is introduced to the system. Now, of course, it's a bit hasty to discard A equals to RB proposal completely from this argument or from this theorem. But this theorem certainly serves as a concrete counterargument against it. Here, I want to emphasize that I have two secret assumptions. Well, it's not secret, it's written in the theorem, but there are two assumptions in deriving this theorem. First, I assume that there will be a scrambling time separation between the infolding observer and the outgoing mode. That is autocast decay, that is the assumption. Another assumption is that the Hilbert space size of A observer is larger than Hilbert space size of outgoing mode D. Now, there are actually very natural justification for these assumptions, which I would like to mention later. Now, let us further think over the implication of this decoupling theorem. The theorem suggests that the interior partner mode can be actually found on C and A prime, where C is the remaining black hole degree of freedom. A prime is just a reference system. So it's not that important. But the most crucial point is that the interior partner mode can be defined without involving RE radiation at all. Therefore, this construction this identification of the interior mode can avoid the non-locality problem completely. Another important implication of the theorem is that the construction of the interior operator is actually state independent, in a sense that it does not depend on how the black hole was initially entangled with the RA radiation. And yet another important point is that the same construction of interior operator or interior mode is actually works well for young black hole, young pure state black hole as well. It's simply because it did not involve our degree of our irradiation degree of freedom. Now, because of this, our result actually potentially resolves a certain variant of the firewall puzzle formulated for the black hole typical microstate, which was due to Marov and Polchinski. However, it is still important to keep in mind that the construction of interior operators still depends on the initial state of the importing observer. This seems to suggest that the black hole interior is actually observer-dependent object. Namely, it says that if two importing observers separated by a scrambling time, when they jump into the black hole, they will see different black hole interiors, and they will not be able to communicate inside the black hole, which is actually something sort of already hinted in a paper by Hayden and Prescu. So depending on how you enter the black hole, the entanglement structure is sort of reorganized dynamically, and observer-dependent interior mode will be dynamically prepared. That is at least what this decoupling theorem seems to suggest. Okay, so let me summarize our findings so far. So we have shown that outgoing mode D, which was originally entangled with R, will be decoupled from the R irradiation R due to the scrambling dynamics, which was triggered by the importing observer. This seems to suggest that the previous proposal may break down once someone actually jumped into a black hole. And because of this decoupling phenomena, the interior operator can be written in a state independent manner. And it actually works well for young black hole as well. But it is still important to keep in mind that the interior operator or interior mode is observer dependent. So the black hole interior seems to be something observer dependent. Now with this result in mind, the resolution of the firewall puzzle, namely the paradox identified in the AMPS thought experiment seems immediate. So let me recap the AMPS thought experiment. That is, given the outgoing mode D, let us distill the qubit RD in the R irradiation RD, which would be entangled with D. Now we're gonna give this qubit RD actually to Alice. And then we ask Alice to put this qubit RD in her pocket and jump into the black hole to see the interior mode detail. If she can verify the entanglement between D and RD, as well as D and D tilde, then she can verify the violation of monogamy of entanglement. This is the AMPS paradox. Now the resolution is as follows. When the infolding observer enters the black hole, she will trigger scrambling dynamics, creates a new interior partner mode D tilde, which is different from the original partner mode RD. Therefore, there is no contradiction with monogamy of quantum entanglement, even if she observes the interior mode D tilde. Okay. Now it's probably a good time to revisit the two assumptions behind the decoupling theorem. As for the scrambling time separation, in order for the importing observer to encounter interior mode and also outgoing mode near the black hole horizon, it's actually the separation should be at least the scrambling time. Otherwise, their encounter will happen far away from the black hole horizon. And sometimes it's actually happen very close to the singularity. So this is the justification that it is very reasonable to think that the time separation between importing observer and outgoing mode is order of the scrambling time. And about the assumption on the Hilbert space size, this is more subtle. But first argument is that, let's recall that in the AMPS thought experiment, we actually needed to give this distributed qubit to Alice in order to verify potential violation of monogamy of entanglement. So this qubit, which was handed to Alice, is actually enough to induce the necessary decoupling phenomena to save monogamy of entanglement. But of course, some of you may still wonder what happens if the outgoing mode D consists of a large number of qubits. Then one possible answer, which is a bit metaphysical, so I'm not quite satisfied with this answer, but is that in order for an observer to experience some physics, of course, that person should carry some amount of entropies. So if Alice wants to see the physics of crossing the horizon, then she should carry at least enough entropy, let's say as big as D or D tilde, in order to actually experience the horizon crossing with full sensitivity. Another possible explanation is to view.
Sorry, Benny, when you said entropy, when are you talking about the, all of Hawking radiation that comes out, or like what fraction of it are we talking about?
So here I'm talking about the outgoing mode only.
But how much of the outgoing mode is it?
How much? I cannot give you a number, but maybe the next thing I might mention may give you an answer.
Okay, so thanks.
And so here I have been talking about infalling observer as a person, but I think the more better way to proceed, like bring this program, is to view the infalling observer A as all the infalling modes in the low energy effective quantum field theory defined on this wedge outside the horizon. Then it is very natural to view D as all the outgoing modes. And it's very natural to view A and D as the same Hilbert spaces. So in this interpretation, of course the separation is vague, but the B and C can be identified as all the high energy degrees of freedom, which may be associated with past and future horizons. I believe in the gravity, this separation between low energy degree of freedom and high energy degree of freedom are actually quite clear, but still this distinction may be a bit vague. But what I imagine is that instead of actually thinking about observers, we should think all the infalling mode A as a sort of an infalling probe, and then D is all the outgoing mode. Then this way of thinking, we may be able to turn this thing into a more formal mapping between low energy effective field theory on left wedge or the outside wedge to the effective field theory on the Rindra, near the Rindra horizon. So that's my.
Oh, thank you.
So here I'm implicitly assuming that the black hole is quasi-static, that is, evaporation is not important in the time scale I'm looking at. So I'm taking A and D to be the same size. Okay, finally, let me briefly comment on the gravity interpretation of this decoupling phenomenon. Now, for simplicity of discussion, I focus on two-sided ADS black hole, but this is not really essential limitation. So here, the other side of the black hole can be viewed as RE radiation. And you can find the partner mode RD on the other side in a very standard manner. Now, in the presence of the infalling observer, we may treat Alice as a gravitational shock wave, which shifts the horizon, as shown here. Then we see that Alice will encounter sort of dynamically created new partner mode D tilde behind the horizon, whereas the original partner mode RD will be shifted away and then to somewhere near the singularity. So that is possible interpretation from a gravitational shock wave. Now here, let me briefly mention that a similar interpretation was recently provided from the perspective of soft hair. So it's a very recent work. Now, our result also provides a resolution to another interesting conceptual puzzle called the Marov wall puzzle. But maybe I can just skip it. The puzzle is that why two people can meet inside the black hole even though two sides are not coupled. And my answer is that they should not be able to meet. And then this causal relation implied by the Penrose diagram breaks down due to the scrambling dynamics or gravitational back reaction. Okay. So far, I have sort of demonstrated that scrambling phenomena provides a sort of useful insight into black hole information loss problem or hidden presque problem and the firewall problem. Finally, I would like to argue that these two problems are actually closely related to each other. So let's recall that the information loss problem or hidden presque problem proceeds as shown here, that this a quantum state is thrown into a black hole and we try to recover it by catching a late radiation. Now the firewall problem, but this time, let us just hypothetically imagine that we can reverse the flow of the time and just imagine that. And then look at this problem backwards in time. Then there's this outgoing mode, which will return back to the black hole because we are reversing the flow of the time. Then later, the infolding observer, Alice, will be emitted back to the outside at time t equals zero, okay? So then in this backward time flow, what we are trying to do is we are trying to reconstruct the partner of the outgoing mode D by capturing the infolding observer. But the point is that the structure of the problem look very similar if you reverse the flow of the time. And in fact, you can make this equivalence pretty rigorous by using quantum information theoretic techniques. And it's actually an identical problem, I would say. So in this sense, you can interpret the firewall problem as a time reversal of the Hayden Presque phenomenon. And that is precisely the reason why we were able to use the same decoupling theorem. Now, thanks to this equivalence, one can actually use the recovery protocols for the Hayden Presque problem, that is the original information loss problem. So we have nice protocols, like recovery protocols due to myself and Kitai, as well as the traversal wormhole protocols. These protocols can be actually used to reconstruct interior partner operators if you use it in a reverse time. This was actually done in my paper from last year. And this construction has actually a beautiful interpretation from the operator growth viewpoint. And it also revealed a nice observer-dependent nature. So to the best of my knowledge, this is the first example of explicit construction of an operator behind the causal wedge. And actually, all of my results are based on this observation that is, if you go backward in time, then this Hayden Presque problem and the firewall problem actually related to each other. Okay, so let me briefly summarize and talk about a bit of our future work. So the summary is that I have demonstrated that how the sort of information quantum information scrambling phenomena may lead to potential resolution of important conceptual puzzles concerning black holes. And at the center of this argument was the gravitational back reaction, which is amplified by the black hole horizon, and which in a quantum mechanical system corresponds to the quantum information scrambling phenomena. So hopefully I have convinced you the power and the sort of beauty of quantum information theory tools in addressing these interesting questions. Now, let me conclude this colloquium by mentioning two problems I'm currently working on. So both of them are actually on digital space, but the first problem is actually the firewall in digital space. You might think that this can be resolved in a similar manner, but the life is not so simple. For one thing, shockwave actually shift the cosmological horizon in the direction opposite to the case of the black hole horizon because it has minus sign on the surface gravity. Now, another thing is that even formulating the problem is pretty challenging, at least in my opinion, since we need to first understand where these qubits are located in the digital horizon. I'm currently working on this problem, which aims at addressing this question. And I and my PhD student are currently finishing up a certain project, which is about the characterization of the shockwave by using the covariant phase space formalism from GR, GR or beyond GR. And we have actually derived a very beautiful microscopic thermodynamic relation, which is applicable to any bifurcating horizon, which includes, of course, the cosmological one. And show that we show that the gravitational shockwave in one of the horizon can be viewed as a super translation charge measured in the shift in the other direction, the orthogonal charge. So our hope is that such a characterization may more directly relate gravitational back reaction to sort of this recent developments in entropy derivation from soft hair. So second problem is again on digital space, and I'm interested in dark matter or dark energy problem. So as you know, general relativity has explained so many things successfully, but many parts of our universe seems to consist of some mysterious energy or matter. It seems really puzzling. And recently there's a very interesting proposal on the origin of dark matter and energy by Eric Fehrinde, and he borrowed insights from recent developments in the ADS CFT correspondence and the quantum information. Now, I hope to understand the origin of dark matter by using techniques from a tensor network, like the tensor network holographic quantum error correcting code that I used in ADS CFT correspondence, and also incorporating some back reaction pictures. And that is my current goal. And so my ultimate goal is to apply these ideas from quantum information theory to theoretical cosmology and understand their observational consequences, including the origin of dark energy or dark matter. Anyway, okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Benny, for this extremely ambitious and great talk. Everyone should feel free to unmute themselves to give Benny a hand. Can we begin with the students? Are there any questions from students in the audience?
I do have a question, Benny. Well, first of all, congratulations. This is very awesome stuff. But it does look like you really require a finite dimensional Hilbert spaces to handle this whole informational perspective and stuff. So are there any works trying to extend this to infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces and things like this? Because it looks like the condition on the size of the dimension of the systems and the relation between them is very important for your theorems and results. So how does that work?
So first of all, I think two things should be done. First, we need to really, we need to really prove or demonstrate that the black hole is indeed a finite dimensional object. And I think there are many arguments, but of course, we could improve it further. And then another thing we need to improve is, of course, this decoupling phenomenon. So I have demonstrated on qubits, but does it really work for continuum systems? Now, we are making progresses slowly. So I have a paper which looks at the discrete system, but where the Hilbert space does not factorize, so it has a global symmetry. And in this situation, all these things work. That's good. And then I have studied a system of oscillator, so it's a bunch of bosons. And then I have some partial result which seems to show that such a decoupling phenomenon happens, or Hayden-Breskill phenomenon is possible. But then eventually we need to promote all these results to quantum field theory, and that's probably pretty challenging. And yeah, so it would be nice if such an extension comes with a nice proof or argument of the finiteness of the black hole. But I do not know. It's something, needs to be done.
Thank you so much. And thanks for the presentation again.
Any other questions from students before I move on to, I see there's a question from Carlo Ravelli. Any other questions from students first?
Hello, Benny. Yeah, can I ask, like, how do tensor networks come into this for analysis?
Tensor network, I don't know. So are you asking about the dark matter or dark energy?
Yeah, the thing on the slide.
It's pretty still speculative, but
okay.
I'm studying Eric's paper, and then he often mentioned tensor network, and he seems that what he claims can be partly explained nicely by using tensor network toy model on Dojitter. And my current agenda is to basically try to reproduce what he says by using tensor network toy model, and then try to understand what he is saying. And okay. And try to pinpoint what is the property the most important property or essential feature that his proposal relies on.
Alright, cool, thanks.
Carlo, how about your question? Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Latham. Well, thank you very much, Benny. That was particularly clear and very nice. I have a comment more than a question, but then it becomes a question also. As you mentioned, there are different communities that study the same problem, and they start from different assumptions. So that's it was particularly interesting because your presentation was very clear. So and I find it very convincing in its coherence. And also rather beautiful mathematically. So I was asking why in the community in which I work in loop quantum gravity and study the quantum property of black holes in loop quantum gravity, nothing like that happened. And it's not as, I mean, I know in gravity there are some people have questioned unitarity, but that's not the point. The point is, and you were very clear about that, at the very beginning, you said, there are two key assumptions here. One is unitarity, one is the number of states of the black hole. It's not just that it's finite, but it's bounded by the area. That's what generates all the problems. And this is what is not true in loop quantum gravity. Namely, you do have a finite, you do have something which is bounded by the area, but it's just the number of degrees of freedom that I can observe from the external black holes before something happens, before the end of the evaporation. While the actual Hilbert space that describes what happened inside as well, it's larger. And that's, once you have this possibility, which is coherent, seems to me, totally possibility, you just don't have this puzzle to start from because information is just inside and come up later on. So that's, I think, is the difference. And so the other physical possibility that would avoid the scramble. Now, this leads to the question, because you have been, and that was made me particularly interesting for me, you have been talking about the inside observations. So what one observer, and you even try to make it concrete by making the observer sort of part of the inside Hilbert space. So the degrees of freedom of the observer included in the Hilbert space. But, and that's my question, isn't there a tension between your initial assumptions, namely that the black hole number of states is bounded by the area, and the fact that you have an arbitrary large observer? In an old black hole, you can wait, you can have an equal time surface such that the horizon is very small. It's just a little bit before Planckian. And nevertheless, inside, you're in a classical region with your full observer and machine. Mm-hmm. And this is what it seems to allow to quantum gravity, in loop quantum gravity, but your initial hypothesis denies. That's the question, I think.
I see. That's a bit, I think, tricky question to answer. And let's see, finiteness. So when I set up the toy models, when I'm inferring observer, actually jump into the black hole. My toy model, the assumption is the following. Initially, the black hole is n-qubit system, and it's the entropy of the black hole. And the entropy increases because of the imploding observer. And that is what I mean by the imploding observer being a qubit. So the Hilbert space for the imploding observer is just this increase of the coarse-grained entropy. So that is my mathematical assumption of the toy model. Now, I totally agree with you in a sense that this is an assumption, and I have no concrete way of proving it at this moment. And then, so, yeah, but I think that this whole puzzle, firewall puzzle, or many other puzzles, in my opinion, it seems like to be emerging from the following fact that if we look at the black hole, we can hide so many things inside the black hole. We can take any slice, and then we can take a slice which is very, very big. And it seems that the interior Hilbert space seems to be diverging. So then, but somehow from the outside, the total Hilbert space seems to be finite. And then, well, that is one possibility. And then I want to understand why that the thing is possible. And then I feel that by thinking about the probe particle and back reactions from probe particles, most of the interior portion becomes not accessible from the outside. And that is something I kind of think in mind, but it's pretty difficult to make these things concrete or quantitative. So that is my current understanding, but I'm open to both possibility. I mean, these are logically possible scenarios, but right now my goal is to reconcile these different assumptions and then demonstrate that there's no paradox.
Thank you. Thank you. I look forward to the possibility of discussing more in person. Thank you.
Sang-sik, go for it.
Hi, Benny. So regarding your second part, so when no observer jumps into the black hole, and if we see, say, a new Hawking radiation, is new Hawking radiation entangled with what is inside the black hole or the earlier Hawking radiation?
Oh, so you have an old black hole, and you don't do anything to the black hole. And then there is a particle coming out from the black hole, and then where is it entangled?
Right.
That will be in the RE radiation.
So that means it's not entangled with what is inside of black hole. So that does that mean firewall?
Oh, no. So in that situation, it is okay to think that the interior mode is actually same as the RE radiation. Some degree of freedom in the RE radiation, but you just cannot see it.
Okay, so you're not excluding the possibility that the Hilbert space of the what is inside the black hole is part of what is outside?
More precisely, when I talk about effective field theory near the horizon, then smoothness and so on. So my speculation is that when we pick some slice and then define a quantum field theory, then by that time I'm already fixing the initial state of the imploding particle to something. So that effective field theory itself is actually already observer dependent. So whenever I say that the black hole horizon is smooth, and then I'm already picking some imploding particles or imploding holes, fixed the boundary or outside. That is my sort of the understanding.
Okay.
So there's nothing wrong that the outgoing mode from the black hole is entangled with the RE radiation.
Okay. So since in view of time, is maybe unless there's one pressing last question, if not, let's thank Benny one more time for a great talk.